I think there's probably several
better. This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the core.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones, the podcast that never sleeps. Okay, well, maybe that's not exactly true. So let me start off with a few apologies. Apology number one. For those of you avid, insatiable listeners who tune in hoping for a new Infants podcast each week, it's been a bit of a dry spell. Sorry about that. What can I say? We've been busy. Apology number two. For those of you who have been loyal, adoring fans of Mormon Expression, I want to deeply and sincerely apologize for any and all hurt feelings caused by today's playful little intro. It was not meant to be snarky. Well, okay, maybe it was meant to be a little snarky, but it's all out of love. Apology number three. For those of you not following Infants on Thrones week to week, who are not disappointed by our ever-increasing slacktitude, or for those of you who have never listened to Mormon Expression and don't really get the joke, sorry that you had to sit through Apology 1 and Apology 2. So here's the deal. As many of you know, both Tom and I were producers and panelists on Mormon Expression for several years before that podcast ended and this one started. During that time, there were maybe four or five episodes that were produced, but for one reason or another, were never published. Well, today you get to hear one of them. Why today, you ask? It's simple. All our other infant projects are currently still in their, infancy, and not quite ready for publication yet. And rather than let a fourth week go by without an infants podcast, we decided to dip into this discarded dung heap and dust this one off in the hopes of finding something salvageable. I hope you find it interesting. So let me set the stage for you. The panel discussion you're about to hear was originally recorded in April 2011 in response to Rock Waterman's blog post, The Metaphysics of Mormonism, on puremormonism.com. In his post, Rock delved into the murky realm of quantum physics to try to illustrate some of the teachings of the Mormon founder Joseph Smith. Specifically, those teachings on intelligence. No, I'm not being facetious here. Joseph Smith taught that intelligence is the basic building block of life, or at least the basic building block of human life. Let me explain. Once upon a time, before God, before man, there were these things called intelligences, or the light of truth, which were not created or made, neither indeed can they be. But at least one of these intelligences was far more intelligent than the others. And that's God. That's how God came to be. And God, seeing us as weaker intelligences, organized us into spirit bodies and then placed those spirits into mortal bodies so that we could advance as he did and become eventually as he is. Rock's theory is that these intelligences are essentially the building blocks of all living things. They are themselves living things, and they themselves have agency. They have choice. They can decide to follow or not follow the direction of God. But obviously, they just do whatever he says. Why? Because they love him. God shows them respect, kindness, compassion. He treats them all nice and special, and they just love him for that. So they freely do what he asks. Thus, according to Rock, the source of godlike power is respect, kindness, and compassion for others. And that's what we're here on this earth to learn. That's the process of becoming like God. So these intelligences have free will, they act, not always in a predictable way. But Rock contends that the discoveries being made today by scientists into the realm of quantum physics are validating this position. And that was the major thrust of his blog post, this theory that he referred to as the Tao of Mormonism. It's an interesting theory. And really, anything that encourages respect, kindness, and compassion is at least worth listening to in my book. That's my theory, at least. But you all know our dear friend and fellow infant, Randy Snyder.
Well, if it's not f***ing good, you can edit f***ing out, motherfucker.
Yeah, that's him. Now, I love talking to Randy. He often sets me straight when I'm otherwise curvy. And when I mentioned Rock's theory to him, he scoffed a bit and said something about how he really liked Rock and his ideas, but poor Rock just suffers from bad thinking. Bad thinking? What is that? And that's another way of saying that his conclusions don't make sense, right? I sort of hate that phrase, by the way, making sense. What does it mean for something to make sense? What does it mean for something to not make sense? Because whether you or I or Randy agree with Rock at all, his theory certainly makes sense, at least to him. There must be some logic to his reasoning, or something there to bridge the gaps, or anything that we might see as gaps, in his logic. So what is that? Inquiring minds want to know. So the moment that Randy questioned Rock's thinking, I sort of smiled inside, and right then and there determined to get the two of them together to discuss this Tao of Mormonism thing and see what kind of a podcast we could make out of it. I also invited another friend for balance, Andrea Statz. I felt that Andrea had the ability to appreciate and sympathize with Rock's position, but at the same time also evidence a keen mind and what I hoped Randy would recognize as good thinking. So the four of us got together and started to talk, but eventually the conversation took some twists and turns that I didn't quite expect. They just didn't quite make sense. Or did they? Why don't you listen in and decide that for yourself? I am joined by three good friends. I've got Rock Waterman.
Pleasure to be here, Glenn. Thank you.
And I've got Randy Snyder.
Good evening.
And I've got Andrea. And are we using your last name, Andrea?
We can use my last name. Okay. I love my last name.
Okay. And we've got Andrea Statz.
Hello.
And, I think we're calling this the Tao of Mormonism, and this is based on a post that Rock wrote on Pure Mormonism. One of the things that is unique to this podcast format that you don't get if you go and read his blog is that Rock is a bit of a seer himself. And
a lot more than Thomas Monson is.
Well,
explain. What do you mean by that?
Well, one day, Rock was led by the Spirit, and we don't have time for the full story, but he discovered some ancient records. And being kind of an older guy, he just happened to have in his possession an ancient record player. And so he listened to it, and what he discovered was an actual early recording of the actual Joseph Smith sermonizing about the restored gospel and the power that controls the universe. And we are actually going to play that for you right here, right now.
The Force is what gives the Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together.
Who, by the way, bemoaned and despised his involvement with Star Wars to the day he died.
Oh, Alec Guinness did?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So this quote, actually, of course, right, we've got Alec Guinness, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and this is what Rock uses to kick off his blog with. You know, you're comparing what the gospel to the Force or Joseph Smith's teaching to the Force. Explain why did you start with that, Rock?
Yeah, not the gospel, but I was actually fascinated by how closely Obi-Wan's words echoed those of Joseph Smith in DNC 88 and 93. Read the blog. But anyway, it turns out that early Mormon theology was very close to what we would call today the Force or the Tao. The Tao is has been defined by one professor as everything in the universe. It's contained in the universe, and it actually is the universe. And Joseph Smith taught about this matter called light that contained intelligence and truth. And he talks about how that is actually the controlling forces that, I don't want to say control God, but that where God gets his power.
So is that like what the priesthood is?
No, I don't think the priesthood is anything like that. I think the priesthood is, I don't know how I would describe the priesthood. I wouldn't even want to get into it right now. But it's more like this connecting. Now, I always thought the Spirit was either the Holy Ghost that somehow jumped around inside of each of us at the same time, and so that we all have the Holy Ghost at some time. He was sharing his personage. But it turns out that the Spirit is actually this huge, comprehensive plasma, invisible plasma, that simply inhabits everything. And in that plasma, we'll call it, is intelligence. This is how we can communicate through prayer, because something we ask for in one place can be immediately communicated in another. Apparently, we do have individual spirits that made from this chunk of matter, and this is a fine matter, pure matter, as Joseph Smith says. So we are all made of that, and that's what the essence of all of us are. At the core, I am a being of light with a body of coarser matter clothing me.
Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter.
Faith is something that it's not really. I don't see it anymore as a religious thing. Faith is a reality. For example, I have faith that tomorrow the sun will come up. I have faith that if I step off a building, I'm going to fall. Faith is the science of possibilities, which is what they call quantum theory. It's the science of possibilities.
This was one of my favorite phrases that you used in your blog, Joseph's far-reaching teachings. I just love the way that sounds.
Well, we have so gotten away from the glorious things, the important things. Basically, what he's saying is you deserve to be open to the possibilities that there is a lot more than you can possibly imagine going on out there.
Brock went on like this for a while. The important parts to take out of that discussion, and what I'll summarize for you here now, is the idea that different views of the universe have changed over time. Brock claims that ancient Eastern religions like Buddhism and Taoism understood the fabric of the universe better than we do today. Even in Western science, it was believed that outer space was comprised of different levels of a mysterious plasma-like element called ether. And that view changed with Einstein and gravity and the theory of relativity. And that view is again changing today with quantum physics, plasma theory, string theory. But at this point in the conversation, Randy had heard just about all that he could stand.
Can I interject just real quick?
By all means.
Just a quick little thing. What killed the ether, the death knell for ether, was when they discovered that waves can propagate inside a vacuum, that you didn't need a substrate to have waves propagate. It's not a philosophical thing. It's a scientific, empirical thing. It is dead.
So was that the beginning of the plasma theory of the universe?
This plasma thing, I think that's some fringe thing. I don't think that's anything established.
Well, it is a fringe thing. But
It's definitely a fringe thing. I hadn't even heard of it.
Yeah.
Skeptics haven't even addressed that. It's so fringe. So quantum consciousness is definitely a bigger movement and kind of like the new age spirituality or, mysticism that's crept into culture.
The plasma theory is gaining ascendance primarily because some things that quantum theory apparently can't explain or has to rely on. You end up with black holes and parallel universes, and you have to start believing in a whole lot of this stuff in order for string theory, for example, to work. So the plasma theory takes it back to an electromagnetically based universe rather than a gravity-based universe. And so that's what these guys are looking at. These guys said, look, it can't get any weirder than this, so let's look at this.
Well, before we talk about plasma and string, let's first define quickly what we're talking about with quantum.
Okay, my understanding is that quantum is defined as the minimum amount of any physical entity involved in an interaction. So it's a really small thing, but apparently there's something smaller than that that they detect, and that's a quark. And so I take that and I say from a theological point of view, we might look at the quantum as that which acts and the quark as that which is acted upon. As Lehi is telling his sons in 2 Nephi, he's saying that everything is either acts or is acted upon. So I'm looking at that like that. I'm not advocating, I don't know. But I kind of think that's, like I said, it's an interesting playground.
When you talked about quantum and quarks, I was very glad that the next line that you put is, at this point, I really don't know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I don't.
You don't. and I don't pretend, I'm not a physicist. I'm an orthodontist, for crying out loud. But, you know, just looking up quark and quantum on Wikipedia, a quark is what makes up protons and neutrons. A quantum is the smallest, like, you know, packet of energy. I think quantum is talking more about electrons, and quarks is talking more about the nucleus, the protons and the neutrons. So I really didn't know where you were going with the acted upon.
Well, I don't really know. I don't really think they really know. For one thing, can't observe these things. All we can do is mathematically assume that they're out there, they're down there. And I'm also aware of the theory that there is no such thing as the smallest thing, that every time something splits, you still end up with something.
Well, yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, we're always finding new frontiers, even in the micro world. But my problem is when people insert some kind of, like, esoteric knowledge that is totally shooting from the hip, like this quantum consciousness, that's where I have a problem with is, you know, people making stretches and interpretations that aren't, and a lot of times are abusing what we understand about physics.
Well, look at the way I word things, Randy. I don't believe these things. I don't advocate these things. I just say, isn't this interesting? This is what I've seen. This is what I've learned. And this could be. Once again, we come back to the science of possibilities. Is it possible? Could be. Let's look deeper. But if you have me on here because you think I'm an expert on quantum theory, you got the wrong guy. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, I think if we had an expert on quantum theory, everyone would be bored to death. So
yeah,
it's so hard to understand it. It's even harder to explain it.
Yeah. Well, quantum theory apparently goes two ways. It's the study of all the biggest things in the universe, and then also the study of the smallest things in the universe. And when you start looking at the smaller things, they don't work anywhere like the big stuff does. They don't behave according to the laws of physics, and so it's
now that's puzzling. Okay, that's where I take exception. That's just a fundamentally false statement.
Well,
quantum physics is not the study of how matter sometimes disobeys physics. That's not true. Quantum physics is the physics of really, really small particles, of which some, you know, in our brain, where we've evolved to experience the world at the macro level, things aren't acting intuitively to us. Our brain isn't evolved to understand what's going on at the quantum level. That doesn't mean that they're breaking fundamental laws of physics. It's just that we haven't fully been able to unify quantum theory with the theory of relativity. You know, how things behave at the super micro level versus how things behave at the super macro level, you know, with planets. So that's an exception I have to take.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
I think you guys are saying the same thing. Yeah,
yeah. It's my understanding that this is one of the things that they're noticing, that things don't behave the way we expect them. But apparently I misspoke if I said this is what the science is, because I think the science has actually been defined by one of its advocates as the science of possibilities. They're saying we don't know how this works. It certainly is fascinating. Let's keep looking.
Well, I think one of the important things is that we don't need to really intuitively understand a lot of the assumptions that are mysterious, because quantum theory just works. It's able to predict things incredibly accurately. And just because some of the assumptions we have to make seem counterintuitive to our mind, our brains, which aren't evolved to understand things at that level. Like, you can't really even say, what does an electron look like? Well, that doesn't even make sense.
Right, right.
And scientists don't even care anymore, because it doesn't matter. They don't need to know what an electron looks like. It would look like as if we could look at, you know, the glass that's sitting on the table in front of me. It's not important in being able to use it and understand the behavior at this level. So
many sciences.
A lot of the stuff I'm drawing from, I'll just full disclosure, is from, if people want to look it up, it's a fantastic It's only 22, 23 minutes. It's by Richard Dawkins, and it's called Queerer Than We Can Suppose. And he basically is talking about how we don't have to understand how things work at the super micro level, because our brains have evolved to, because for instance, when you look at a table, what is a table mostly made of? It's mostly made of atoms. What are atoms mostly made of? Empty space. Mm-hmm. So if the table is made of mostly atoms, and atoms are made of mostly space, and I, in turn, am made of mostly atoms, which are made of mostly space, I should be able to put my hand on the table and go right through it. But we know that doesn't happen. And so our brains have evolved to interpret the table as something solid that you can't try to, you know, you're going to get damaged if you try to go through it. And whereas, like, if a neutrino could evolve a brain, it would see that the table is mostly empty space because it can go right through it with no problem. And so basically, we just can't – we're not evolved to see the world – we're evolved to see the world in a practical sense, and that's why things aren't intuitive at the super micro level. This is why the movie 2012 is so awful. Or at least one of the reasons why.
Oh, that's why?
12 is so awful.
Okay.
The whole premise is like, okay, why does the world end? Well, they didn't even, they're so lazy that they didn't even try
didn't
to
even
something
give
positive.
Us a reason. Yeah.
Well, they gave a reason. They said, oh, you know, because the sun bombards us with neutrinos every day, all day long, when the sun's up. And they said, you know how neutrinos used to not interact with matter? Well, now they do. And that's equivalent to me saying, you know how when you used to touch water and your hand would get wet? Well, now your hand explodes. That's the equivalent of the premise of 2012. Neutrinos are neutral charge. They travel almost at the speed of light, and they don't interact with matter. So
I thought 2012 was a very exciting film. We're talking about the feature film, awful. Right?
I watch it. It's so... unbelievable.
Are we talking about a feature film, or is this some documentary?
No, we're talking about the feature film.
Oh, okay.
But we should be talking about your blog. So
let's talk about movies.
So you talked about quantum physics, and you talked about string theory, and you talked about plasma theory, but all of these things were a means to an end, because what you were interested in, Rock, was Joseph Smith's teachings. You are interested in light. What, you know, we started talking about DNC 88 and how Joseph Smith talked about intelligence and light being what was made up in the universe. And so really what interested you was how science is now making these discoveries that possibly could be the same things that Joseph Smith revealed that might also have been similar to what had been known even by Eastern philosophers. Is that right?
Are we talking about Tao, Chinese?
Sure.
Japanese? Yeah. You know, I'm fascinated by what is this light? What is this intelligence? What is this spirit substance that can be in all places at once and communicate across the universe instantly? So, yeah, I'm bringing it all home to that. Because what I do is I look at the advances in quantum theory and how some of these more far out New Age people, and they talk like early Mormons, but you don't hear Mormons Day talking like that at all, because our religion has changed. We don't. Yeah. We're not interested in the things that Joseph Smith taught that count. That's really what I'm talking about. And that's what my whole blog is about. Yeah. Getting back to the core theology that's really fascinating to me, and not just the, well, we have to obey our leaders, that sort of thing that we're taught today.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, that was what really jumped out. When you, let me find it here. You gave the DNC section 130, verses 20 to 21. We learn that there is a law irrevocably decreed in heaven before the foundations of this world upon which all blessings are predicated. And when we obtain any blessing from God, it is by obedience to that law upon which it's predicated. And you say that the way that the church interprets this today is basically obey the commandments that are given to us by the leaders of the church.
Yeah, and I think it means something completely different. I think it means align yourself with the powers in the universe And when you do, then these irrevocable laws that have existed before the foundation of the world, and I assume by that it means before, that God didn't lay down this law and say, this is the way it's going to be. These are the way things are. Under quantum theory, there are high vibrations and low vibrations. And if you want something, if you want to receive something from the universe, and I'm putting that in air quotes here, then you have to align yourself with those vibrations. Now, I don't know much about it. I'm not advocating it. Once again, I'm not a believer. There's a lot of that I'm hearing from advocates of quantum theory. And just getting back to you, Randy, some people say that that the table in front of me only exists in my mind. It only exists. It's not there when I leave the room. Well, I can't wrap my mind around that.
No, that's not true. The table exists when you're not in the room.
Well, of course.
See, that's the kind of crappy woo that that what the bleep do we know propagates.
What did you say? Crappy woo?
Yes, it's actually a scientific term.
Crappy woo?
I like that. I'll use it.
Are you wearing like pink fuzzy slippers right now, Randy? Crappy woo?
Well, woo. I'll tell you, Randy.
Woo is a term. Crappy's slang. Woo is an actual term.
Is that like the Taoism?
Mysticism and pseudoscience.
Like woo way, crappy woo.
Woo.
Well, I agree with you thoroughly. I agree with you completely, Randy. That's kind of a nonsense thing that I've created this table, and it's here only because I created it. It's only because it's in my mind. Because that's nonsense. But you got to remember, this field attracts all kinds of oddball ideas, and so that's not what I would consider part of quantum theory. That's just somebody's idea or interpretation of it. So.
And usually it also entails selling books, but yeah. I know you don't do that, so I'm not going after you for that. But this whole abuse of physics, the table's in a superposition until it's observed, and then it comes into being, or you can affect your reality with your consciousness, like with horrible films like The Secret and What the Bleep.
You can affect reality with your consciousness.
Hey.
Andrea.
Hey, I'm still here.
Hey.
Okay.
Even though you didn't observe me.
Ooh.
Exactly.
Zing.
You proved my point. You are there regardless of whether I consciously perceive you.
Well, I'd forgotten she was there.
Was I?
How does consciousness interact with matter and affect its...
Okay. Well, here's an example from a book I read called The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, and I can't remember who it's by. A Tibetan. And he was talking about the idea of consciousness and thoughts having effects on the physical world. And, there's obviously a very simple example of look at everything around you. That was an idea before it ever existed. But then the other example that he used was, haven't you ever felt physically ill because of a mental state, had a stomach ache because you were nervous, or gotten a headache because of anxiety, something like that. So our thoughts absolutely do affect our bodies. And so if you look at that on a larger level, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that our thoughts can affect, the world around us.
Well, I'm going to go after the first thing you said. And you said first, before you observe something, it was a concept before you observed it. That is mistaking the map for the place. Rocks existed before minds came into being to perceive the rocks. So if you're saying the rock didn't exist...
I'm not saying a rock. I'm saying something that's man-made.
But the concept of a rock does not exist until a mind exists. So the fact that we eventually developed brains that could perceive the rock has no effect on whether the rock exists. Now, the second thing you talked about was your mind talking about your mind affecting how you feel. Well, that's everything, you know, that's the hypochondriacs, everything that they feel is in their mind, because how many times do the hypochondriacs go to a doctor? They truly feel, and there's no way that anyone can convince them that they don't feel like they have a stomachache, but they can't find anything wrong with their stomach, no matter how many tests they do. So yes, your mind can completely create these illusions of symptoms, but that doesn't mean that the symptoms exist.
I'm not talking about illusions of symptoms. I'm talking about actually being sick.
Well, feeling sick is different than actual something wrong with the organ that you're perceiving has a problem.
It's a well-known fact that stress, when you're under stress, you are much more likely to get actually ill.
But stress involves an interaction with those organs. So, yes, stress is a different thing. If you're feeling stressed, yes, stress, there's nothing magical about that. There's no consciousness. There's no.
I'm not saying that any of this is magical.
But you're saying that consciousness can affect matter, not that neurotransmitters and hormones can cause organs to feel less than ideal. Those are two totally separate things. We're talking. One thing is
they're really not.
I'm with Andrea.
They are two different things. You got neurotransmitters, which are chemicals, and you've got enzymes. All these things that are involved with stress. Of course, those are gonna adversely affect organs. That has nothing to do with consciousness. These are chemicals, not consciousness.
Then why did Heavenly Father put the pituitary gland in the brain?
Yeah.
Oh boy. So
what is it? You know, what is it that's driving all of those neurochemicals?
Not quantum physics. It's the secretion of enzymes and proteins.
And why? Why is that happening?
There's nothing mysterious or mystical about that. What I'm talking about is...
But she's not saying mysterious or mystical. She's just talking about thoughts, right?
But okay, so let's say, because this is something that I've dealt with, let's say I'm having a panic attack, okay? Now, the panic attack is a physical reaction. Obviously, there's hormones and adrenaline and all kinds of stuff going on that causes that. But where does that start?
It starts in the brain,
with
of course.
Thoughts.
Here's where it becomes magical, Randy. It becomes magical if I'm thinking about you getting sick and you get sick. Like
exactly.
She's not.
Yeah. Now,
like,
if I'm observing rock and I'm saying
that's voodoo.
My negativity. I'm feeling. And this is what you get from awful movies like The Secret. They're just awful. Some of the worst stuff that's ever been produced by humans.
But that's not what Andrew's talking about.
Let me finish.
I'm not saying that.
Me, that the negativity around me is going to quantumly cause an effect on everyone around me. And in fact, let me give you a little anecdote. My brother teaches high school kids at a private school in Salt Lake City. And one of his students' aunts got totally into The Secret, which totally abuses quantum theory. I've been talking so much, I'm getting cotton-mouthed. So she's totally believes that negativity breeds negativity because of the quantum consciousness of people around you. Her sister, who is the mother of my brother's student, is going through a divorce. So she's just got negativity all around it. And she will not even be in the same room with her sister because she's afraid of the quantum negativity effects that are going to happen. And this is some of the real world examples of why this stuff bugs me.
Well, that kind of fear is what's promoting the negativity. That's negativity in itself. So
it's invoking what you're invoking, which is quantum consciousness that somehow says that my consciousness can affect other people.
Well, you'd be around a grumpy person, you get grumpy. Of course, but negativity affects people.
But that's different. If you're grumpy, you're giving nonverbal cues and.
All right. I don't know.
I'm verbal. Randy's grumpiness is kind of amusing me.
But I mean, but to compare that your brain can have an effect on the well-being of your body to the my consciousness have an effect on objects outside my body, those are two different things.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, Randy. If somebody's talking about a mystical, magical thing, I'm going to be skeptical of that. But if I don't think that's what Andrew was saying.
No, I'm not talking about like if I really think about getting a new car, I'll get a new car. But I do think that our thoughts become our reality. And if you focus on really negative things, then yeah, you're going to experience a lot of negativity in your life. And if you focus on positive things, then you're probably going to notice a lot more positive things in your life.
And you didn't say our thoughts become another person's reality.
No.
Right. Okay. So, you know,
I said something about the secret. I saw it once, and so I'm no expert on it, but I recall a scene where a kid wanted a bike really bad, and then there's another scene, and he gets a bike. So I think some people have gotten the wrong impression of how thought creation works. It doesn't work like that. If you want a bike, the kid probably worked for it, earned the money, and bought it. And that's what happens with Andrea's example of the car. She wants a car. You start doing what it takes, and the next thing you know, eventually you have yourself that car, or you have the house.
But you don't have to bastardize quantum theory to come to those conclusions. And I'm not saying that having positive thoughts don't drive you to do positive things, which then leads to actions. I mean, that's just normal stuff. But you don't have to invoke quantum theory to explain those things. It's because there's a scene in The Secret, Rock, where a guy's sitting in his freaking couch, and he's just sitting there thinking positive things about money, 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 money. And he walks to his freaking mailbox and pulls out a check. I mean, come on.
Well, he's magic.
That's the stuff that is it's abusive, and it promotes things that are not productive, because people are going to think that they can just sit there, meditate, and think about positive things and do nothing, and positive things are going to happen in their lives. That's the part that I have a problem with.
I've often thought I should read the book and see if it goes into any more detail and redeems itself, because I agree with you. The movie leaves an impression that there's a big genie in the universe. All you have to do is ask him for stuff, and he'll give it to you. It's never worked for me.
Well, okay. This does kind of lead us to a couple of points that you had in your blog, though, Rock. And it ties into what we talked about earlier with this quote from DNC 130. The law irrevocably decreed, you know, it's not obedience to the laws, the commandments. It's obedience to the laws in nature, in the universe.
In the universe, right.
You know, we're talking about karma. We're talking about like attracting like, and that's what you suggested that Joseph Smith was teaching.
Yes.
We've just kind of trashed here.
Well, I'm not – no, no, no. I do agree with that. I'm just saying that you can't just sit back and wish for things, physical, material things, although there are people for whom that's happened.
So let's explain that. Explain Joseph's teachings. I mean, what did Joseph Smith teach? What's in the DNC?
Oh gosh. You mean in 130?
It's gratitude attracts gratitude, or
charity attracts love. Charity attracts charity. I do believe that if you give without thought of reward, you end up being taken care of somehow. I used to be what I'd call a taker. There are two kinds of people, a giver and a taker. Now I'm pretty generous with my money to beggars and homeless people on the street. And I'm not rich as a result of it, but I don't think too much about, oh, my gosh, I can't afford this. And I just we seem to get by.
I think that's very similar to what's in The Secret. Not that you're sitting on your couch doing nothing and waiting for something to happen. Yeah. You're putting some action behind. But it's these acts of charity. It's this like attracting like.
Okay, I think thought vibration motivates action. So that's the first step. Thinking about something, thinking about a house. Eventually, you find yourself with that house. But you've worked toward it. You've moved in that direction.
So do you think that somebody in Uganda, someone who's struggling to survive, if they think hard enough and they have all these positive vibes, that somehow they're going to have a house?
Well, first,
see, that's not fair.
You can't just bend the universe with your thoughts.
No, but you're kind of getting away, Randy, from the point that Rock was trying to make in his blog, that Joseph Smith was teaching, here is how you can learn to become like God.
Yeah, I'd say so.
It's not by somebody in Uganda thinking, I want a house, poof, here's a house.
No, I'm not talking about that at all.
That's not it. That's missing the point.
Okay, what's the point? Tell me the point.
The point is learning to be a charitable, loving person.
That's exactly it.
Then what do you have to invoke quantum theory for?
Well, I was talking about quantum theory as the way the universe, apparently the way communication reaches.
That's how the universe works.
Because he's thinking about works. He's thinking about these particles in the universe as individual people, that they're agents.
Well, anthropomorphizing.
Yes. Yes.
Which is what our brain has evolved to do.
Because they have agency.
Well, that's a way of understanding them.
Because they have agency to either obey
particles
you.
Particles have agency?
Yes. That is the point of this blog. That they
have agency.
That's the point of his blog. If
there's some type of intelligence.
That they can choose to either obey you or to reject you. And if you respect them.
Choose to obey God.
Yeah. So
This does remind me of King Benjamin's discourse, because I've always loved King Benjamin as a true believer.
Yeah.
He says that we're even less than the dust of the earth, because the dust of the earth obeys the commands of God.
Right.
We don't obey God.
Right.
But they're just dust. Yeah. If there is a God and he imposes a force on a particle of dust, it doesn't have a choice. It acts.
Well, Randy, I ask you, is it possible?
Is it possible?
Is it possible that there is some tiny primitive intelligence attached to every tiny little molecule? It doesn't have to be any smarter than a two-year-old. It can either say yes or no. It can either respond to love or respond to anger. But
What's the consequence to a particle of dust if it chooses to disobey God?
I don't think it. It's not a question of disobeying God. It's a question of God understanding how to command the particle.
I'll just give my answer in this way. Is it possible? Anything's possible, but you can't disprove God. You can't disprove anything that you're saying definitively. Is there any evidence that particles have choices? Or do they just respond to forces?
Well, this is our religion. I mean, you don't. It's not going to be proven. This is once again where faith comes in.
My answer is there's no evidence to show that particles have any kind of agency.
Well, I suppose if you were at the wedding at Cana and Jesus changed the water into wine, you would say, well, and you were there and saw that, you say, well, there's evidence that particles can change and can obey God. But you weren't there.
But that didn't happen.
Well, I know. According to you.
If I was there when Samson killed all the Philistines, or whoever it was he killed with this jawbone of an ass, would I be convinced that God had a hand in that? Dude, probably. But it didn't
Samson.
Yeah. No, I concede the point, Randy. There's no evidence. There isn't, but I mean, to me, I think we're here to discuss the points that Rock's making on the blog, not to prove whether or not they're true.
You know, one of the things that's nice about this new format we do on Infants and Thrones is I can edit things out, I can edit things in, and I want to make a change here, because Randy asked the question about evidence, and while I still say, I don't see any evidence, I don't know that there is any evidence, the point that I wish we would have made in the discussion is that this is the reason that Rock is bringing in quantum theory in the first place. He, if I understand his argument right, he wants quantum theory to provide the evidence that Randy's asking for as to particles having a choice in the way that they behave. And that's the connection. I wish we would have made it in the original discussion. We didn't. We moved on to other things. But I want to jump in and make it now. So guess what? I just did.
Can I just give a little history of myself?
Yeah.
I wrote a paper my freshman year of college
that was talking about how God is not a magical creator God, the Mormon God, that he is a he uses his supreme intelligence to create things. So I totally know where you're coming from, Rock. I totally do. It was a place that I was. I used to, like, there's and actually I got a 98 on that paper because I showed how God is the supreme scientist. He uses supreme intelligence to manipulate matter and energy to create the universe.
What'd you do wrong?
I probably had a grammatical error.
Or like, two.
There's no such thing as 100 on a paper.
I'll show you
yeah,
a couple.
There is. I got four.
This guy didn't give hundreds out. He even told me I got the highest in the class of 98. Okay. But this stuff totally resonated with me because the Mormon God is not a magic God like the Christian God is. He doesn't exist outside of time and space like the Christian God does. And he.
Magic. How is that magic?
How's what magic?
The Christian God.
Because he creates something out of nothing. The Mormon God just manipulates what's already there. Joseph Smith, Rock could back me up, is on record as saying that, God didn't create matter. It was matter can't be created or destroyed. That's one thing Joseph Smith seemed to obliquely get somewhat correct. What was the other thing? Now I got derailed from my. Have you ever heard of Chris Heimerdinger? Right.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tennis Shoes Among the Nephites.
I was a huge fan of Chris Heimerdinger on my mission. I wasn't supposed to listen to him, but I did anyways because I was a rebel. And he had a book called Eddie Fantastic, where he had this supreme science brain that was doing all these amazing things with his science, but he was using Mormon theology. And one of the things he said about becoming like God, you know how it says, God, no unclean thing can dwell with God? He says, well, in physics, matter can't coexist with, or order can't coexist with disorder. So when we become obedient, we become more ordered. And that way we're able to exist with God. So all these things, just, I can understand where Rock's coming from. They totally resonate with me at one point. But in the end, they're just products of his really cool imagination. And that's, I love Rock. I love the stuff he comes with. It's really cool. But
I'm not feeling the love, Randy.
But I'm going to go over all the stuff that he did that I wanted to stand up and applaud that he wrote in his blog.
Huh? Okay.
I'm not just this asshole atheist that thinks everything Rock does is stupid, but a lot of this stuff used to resonate with me, but now it doesn't with my empirical, skeptical brain.
What I really like about this message, regardless of how true any of it may or may not be, you can live your life like this. You can live your life being a charitable person and a loving person and, kind towards other people. And this would give you a reason to do that. You don't have to have this reason to do it.
No, because look, Randy, I'm sure, is a very kind, charitable person.
He's all right.
God doesn't care if he doesn't believe in him. I think God cares more that Randy is kind to his fellow man than whether he believes in the supreme being. I really believe that. So I don't understand these Christians and Mormons who get all frantic because someone's an atheist and we've got to change him. Who cares?
You made a point in the blog, and we talked about the effects of thought on healing.
Definitely have to agree, Rock, with your what you described. It was really kind of funny. Because we've all been through it, right? Not Andrea, because you're not worthy of having the priesthood, Andrea, because you're,
She's worthy. Yeah.
You don't have the necessary piping.
There are bits, but.
Right. But at any rate, there's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure going into a house. So somebody's sick, and you're like, hey, is my worthiness going to affect whether they get better? Or is it just their faith, or is it my faith and their faith combined? And you got all this crap going through your head, and then you do what Rock said in his blog. You couch all your terms into if thy will, thy will be done, or if you have faith.
Yeah, conditional upon your faith.
You totally hedge the whole blessing.
We know it's a crapshoot. How many times, right, in your experience as a Latter-day Saint, even no matter if you're most worthy as a missionary, whatever, have you actually laid your hands upon somebody's head, given them a healing blessing, and had it miraculously work.
Well, this is a very sensitive topic with me because my mom died of cancer after 8 years of power blessings and special blessings and blessings on blessings. And you know, I mean, okay, God needed her on the other side more than my 14-year-old sister needed her desperately. Okay, whatever. You know, I mean, it's totally arbitrary. It puts a lot of pressure on you. You always count your terms, and you just don't see these stories happening like they've been reported back in the 1800s.
And you know, they used to. I definitely believe they used to.
But even crazier miracles happened 2,000 years ago. Water turned to wine.
Yeah.
You know, the farther back you go, the crazier the miracles. You know, Elijah, was it Elijah that called down lightning to destroy his enemies? That doesn't happen anymore. You know, Joshua who had like a few hundred men and they blew a trumpet and the walls fell down? The skeptic meter goes up. The farther back you go, the crazier the miracles are. Maybe the miracles aren't really real.
Well, I think the problem is the priesthood no longer works, and that would be consistent with prophecy. We've rejected the gospel, and we now have a church that worships the church.
Well, I think that's a great place to wrap it up.
Wait a minute. We never talked about what the bleep do we know.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't.
This is awful.
I don't want to hear you just like rip on that movie.
It's a great film.
Oh, my God, Rock.
I think we're going to have some serious disagreements on that.
Okay. I just don't understand like the need to just talk about how horrible something is.
Yeah.
Okay, like if you don't like it, you don't like it. Yeah. No.
It's not a matter of taste. It's not a matter of taste. Okay. So what the bleep do we know? It started by the Rantha cult that is headed by Jay-Z Knight, who summons a 35,000-year-old warrior god.
And you don't believe that, Randy? How can you be such a skeptic?
Rantha has an awful Indian accent from 30,000 years ago.
Yeah.
She got her revelation in a trailer park. There's a red flag. So the whole thing was funded by the Rantha cult, okay?
Yeah. And well, then now you're arguing guilt by association, Randy.
All right.
There's a lot more in there that's worthwhile.
So, Andrea, Nietzsche talked about good versus evil and good versus bad. Good versus evil is like Rock versus Hitler. Rock is good, Hitler's evil, okay? Good versus bad.
Oh, what a relief.
Good versus bad is Shakespeare versus what the bleep do we know? Okay. What the bleep do we know? It isn't intrinsically evil. It's just bad. It's really bad. Okay.
You're comparing apples and oranges with.
You know. No. I'm just talking about that this isn't good versus evil. This is good versus bad. So you got the whole thing is started by this Jay-Z Knight fraud. Okay. So then they do these bullshit experiment, the water experiment where your consciousness turns the water into crystals.
Yeah.
You bought that.
I buy that. Yeah.
You buy it. Oh. All right.
Trying to talk to an atheist is like trying to talk to an evangelist.
Talking to you.
I completely agree, Rock. I completely agree.
You both credulous. Both your credulous minds would believe because that's what credulous minds
you
do.
You see, you only believe things that can be inferred.
Whoa! Now I have a credulous mind.
You do.
You think I'm dumb?
No. This is.
I'm a very skeptical person. But I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm not saying that I buy into the water crystals thing.
Okay. So that's what I'm talking about, though, Andrea, is that this movie tries to pass off bullshit studies as if they're real and they're fairy tales. This guy is not a scientist. It's never been reproduced. And he cherry-picked the samples. He manipulated the photos he changed the contrast to make them look even more spectacular. It was an art project. It wasn't science. And then they talked about, hey, Rock, you remember this part? There's a story where the Native Americans were looking out to the sea and they couldn't see the ships.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay, well, if I don't have to.
You don't have to convince. That's a little odd.
It's a made up story, and it doesn't make any sense. And it empowers.
Okay, but no, here's what you got. Here's what you're doing.
What's the harm? What's the harm? Okay, let me get to this. I got to get to this point.
Okay.
What's the harm? Jay-Z Knight's husband got HIV positive in 1992. It's about the time Magic Johnson got HIV positive. Jay-Z Knight's husband rejected medicine, traditional medicine, in favor of Jay-Z Knight's mystical, magical, quantum healing techniques. He died a year later. Okay? That's the harm. If you want to know the harm, go to what's the harm.
So he exercised his free agency. Who cares?
Who cares? The man died and he could still be alive. That matters to me.
Okay.
This life now matters to me.
In my opinion, the guy gets into the next life and goes, whoops.
Exactly. You're more concerned with what happens after death. I'm more concerned with what happens in this life.
Well, I would be concerned.
I think that's a dangerous attitude to care more about what happens after death than to care about what happens.
Oh, no. That's not the position I'm taking. But what I'm saying is I can understand your concern if he said to you, you cannot have medical care because we're going to go through Jay-Z Knight's methods. Then that's a problem. But I allow everyone to make their own choices. If he dies, he dies. He's stupid.
So it doesn't bother you at all that, say, a Jehovah's Witness would not allow their child to have a blood transfusion because of a verse in the Bible that says that that's forbidden by God? That doesn't bother you to let their kid die? Or that they let themselves die?
I don't want to open this can of worms. But
it's the same thing. It's along the same thread. It's a belief that they have.
I believe that a blood transfusion.
That leads to death because all they care about is what happens after you're dead.
Okay. From what I've read, a blood transfusion is more dangerous than a saline transfusion. Better to have a transfusion of saline and build up your blood with beet juice and spinach juice than to take blood from somebody else. So,
a gunshot victim is not going to beet juice. Is not going to help a gunshot.
No. But they have plenty of saline on hand. But let's not open that. That's a whole nother argument.
Why are you so afraid of death, Randy?
I'm just afraid of death.
Because the devil going to get him.
Yeah, I'm going to go to hell, so I need to prevent it.
Well, but I'm not even just you. I mean, for everyone. Don't you know that we're all matter, and matter is light, and it's intelligent, and it advances, and it progresses, and there's hope in that? God's going to take care of us?
People
go to a better place, Randy. People go to a better place, Randy.
And I believe they do. You know, so if the guy died because...
So it doesn't matter.
Because he made a bad choice, so what? Sometimes the next life is a better one than this one.
And Christ redeemed people. So,
Glenn, you're such a sometimes.
Sometimes.
Well, so I just feel like just because you don't like this movie or you don't like The Secret... that doesn't legitimize the position of all of this is crap, you know?
Exactly. You're picking things out.
But the fact that Rock points to What the Bleep Do We Know as a really good source is telling of Rock's epistemology and his credulity to woo. And so he takes Echinacea, which has absolutely zero evidence of having any efficacy.
What is up with you and the word woo tonight?
Because this is what it's all about. Rock
to
is
woo,
the woo master.
Crap woo. Oh.
Why did you have me on? You had me on to be the
counterweight
to his yang. All right, I don't even know if I got that right.
Okay, but here's what.
You got to understand. Why do
the
I care?
Woo to his
why do
way.
I care, Glenn? Why do I care? Because this credulity that is bred by Rock's epistemology, which is whatever feels good, is true.
That's not what I said.
But I'm oversimplifying. But stuff that resonates with you, whether it's got any kind of foundation in reality, you kind of ascribe to it. And that's what leads you. And I'm the same. I was the same way. When I was a Mormon, I was the biggest sucker.
I'm glad you have everything all figured out now.
God, Andrea, please. But before I became a skeptic, the Brian Dunning podcast, one of the things he talked about was the big scam of water softeners. Guess what? I bought one of those suckers for $5,000.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm a sucker. I'm still paying for it, by the way.
That's why
I'm so angry.
Randy, can I just remind you what I wrote here? Right after I recommended I said, keep in mind that not everything I recommend here contains information I agree with completely or that is all 100% consistent with gospel principles. I make these recommendations because I found much that is of value in them. I think you may too. Check things out and decide for yourself how much it is worth to you.
Now, let me read you from your own blog. Don't be afraid to look into unusual claims from unusual sources. Sometimes that which most resonates with the soul can come to us through unlikeliest people. Mm-hmm. If a book or video seems at first glance the hippy-dippy New Age nonsense, don't let it scare you off. Turn off your skeptical meter. I'm just inserting myself. Either should you be intimidated by authorities who counsel you to avoid non-approved sources and information no matter what authority comes from the realm of science. So you're basically you are drawing a parallel between established science and Mormon.
No. I'm saying don't let it scare you off. I didn't say accept it. I said don't let it keep you from investigating. One of my favorite scriptures
says both are often biased against truth. Religious authorities and scientific authorities are biased against the truth.
But that doesn't mean that this is true. He's not saying this is true. He's just saying don't be afraid of it.
You're setting people up. Like they could. People aren't going to have the tools, the skeptical tools that they need, the critical thinking tools they need to parse out the bad.
You're not giving people credit, enough credit to make their own decisions. I say, hey, I found this interesting. Check it out. You might not. You might think it's crap. You might find something in there of value. I found something. I found a lot of value in What the Bleep Do We Know. Now, you've picked some things that are iffy, but that doesn't mean throw it all out.
But here's your epistemology. The spirit within you will confirm whether something is of value or not. This is this the epistemology. This is where we break, Rock.
No, it's not, because your spirit within you is doing exactly the same thing right now. You just don't call it spirit.
Oh, I don't go by feelings.
Oh, bull crap. You're expressing nothing but feelings right now.
You've been
expressing feelings.
Jay-Z Knight. Oh,
you've been expressing feelings.
This is why you're moaning feelings. I wanted Joshua to be on so that it wouldn't be one against three.
It's not one against three.
It is.
No.
Because you're the devil's advocate, whether you believe me or not. I know you are more aligned with me, but you're the captain devil's advocate, and you like to do mind f***s with people.
Then, Randy.
And so you see an opportunity, you're gonna pile on. But
why wouldn't I make it even and go two on two and take on Andrea and Rock, and we could like double team. We could.
You have more. I think you enjoy. I'm gonna sound narcissistic then if I say that, so I'm not gonna say it.
I know. I was trying so hard. All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining. I enjoyed the discussion. I hope we got something out of it. I really enjoyed the blog. It's a long read. There's a lot in there. What I took out of it, I think I already said that there's some good points in there, ways to live your life that I find inspiring. Even if you kind of get lost in a little bit of the quantum and the string and the plasma. stuff and the things to Joseph Smith, I think some interesting connections. Appreciate you coming on. And as always, the discussion continues over.
Whoa, anyone for the closing prayer?
If I didn't hurt your feelings, then I didn't do my job.
Well,
what?
I'm just kidding. You shut me down right there, man. You shut me down.
Just watch the video in Richard Dawkins' voice. Quiver than we can suppose.
Is that?
Wait.
I'm warning you, though. I understand Richard Dawkins is an atheist.